You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass Politics. I'm Ben Mathis. Kick-Ass Politics is sponsored by Fiverr. You've heard me rave about Fiverr before. That's Fiverr with two R's. Fiverr is the world's largest online marketplace for services, with over 100 categories all offered at a fixed-base price of just $5. Logo design, business consulting, marketing, business cards and stationery, web design, translation, proofreading, legal consulting, and just about any other service you can imagine, all offered at a fixed base price of just $5. And right now, if you go to kickasspolitics.com and click on the Fiverr ad on our sponsor page, you'll be showing your support for the show, and you'll get some great offers on services tailored to your needs. Whatever you need done, find it on Fiverr. And before we start the show, I want to ask for you, the listeners, help with a special project. Over the next few weeks, we're going to be doing a listener survey to get a better idea of who our audience is. No matter how long you've been a listener or how frequently you listen to the show, we'd like to get to know you better and what you want. So I hope you'll visit our website at kickasspolitics.com and click on the listener survey link on the homepage, or there's a survey link in the show notes to this episode. It's just a few quick questions to help us understand who's listening. And seriously, it'll be a huge, huge help to me personally. The other thing you can do to help the show is to go on your Facebook page and Twitter to tell your friends to subscribe to Kick-Ass Politics on iTunes. And if you do that, each week you'll be entered to win a signed copy of a book by one of my recent guests. This week, I'm giving away a copy of Jack Kemp, The Bleeding Heart Conservative Who Changed America, signed by my guests on the next episode, Fred Barnes and Mort Kondracki from Fox News' The Beltway Boys. To be entered to win, just go on Twitter or Facebook and recommend Kick-Ass Politics to your friends. Be sure to include a link to the show on iTunes so they can subscribe, and don't forget to tag us in your posts so we know you participated and we can include you in the drawing. And hey, if you want to double your chances of winning, then promote the show on both Facebook and Twitter. In fact, you'll be entered to win for every time that you recommend Kick-Ass Politics to your friends on your social media. Just help me gain some new listeners, and you'll have a shot at winning a cool prize every week. And now, enjoy the show. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis, and welcome to Kick-Ass Politics. My guest today is former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. From 2007 until just this year, she represented Minnesota's 7th District in Congress, and in 2012, Michelle Bachmann ran for the Republican nomination for president. Before that, she served for 6 years in the Minnesota State Senate and worked as a tax lawyer for the IRS, where she learned firsthand just how dysfunctional the U.S. tax code really is. In Congress, she served on the House Financial Services Committee and the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, which oversees the CIA, the NSA, and other intelligence agencies. A champion of individual liberty and small government, Michelle Bachmann was a vocal critic of the Wall Street bailouts, the Detroit auto bailouts, and Obamacare, and she introduced legislation to repeal the Dodd-Frank financial reform law. She's been a strong supporter of the Tea Party movement from its earliest days, and she founded the House Tea Party Caucus when she was in Congress. On this podcast, Michelle Bachmann will talk about the Tea Party's role in the Republican Party today and her thoughts on the GOP field in 2016. She'll also share her ideas as a former tax attorney on how to simplify the tax code and talk about her grave concerns about Russia, Iran, and Syria, and America's shrinking role in the world under President Obama. Plus, she'll reveal how one of her foster children's 11th grade homework assignment led to her career in politics. Coming up with Michelle Bachmann in just a moment.
Hey Hollywood to Washington, it's time for Kick-Ass Politics. And now here's your host, Ben Mathis.
My guest today is former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann and candidate from the 2012 election. Michelle,
For president.
Yeah. Michelle, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be with you, Ben.
So you started out as a tax attorney.
I did.
Before you went into politics. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of tax plans being thrown around by the candidates in the Republican primary this year. As someone who's dealt with the nightmarish bureaucracy of the IRS and this gargantuan tax code, what do you think is the solution?
Well, the solution is to take the fraud out of the tax system. There's an enormous fraud because of all of the returns that get filed, Medicare fraud, Medicaid fraud, now Obamacare, and a lot of the fraud happens through the tax system. What we need to do is make it fair for everyone. We have a magnificent country. Everyone should pay something. I really like the idea of either a national sales tax. Well, the first thing you have to do is get rid of the entire tax code. So you scrap it. Every part of the tax code you scrap. So you're starting from scratch, blank sheet of paper. If you have a blank sheet of paper, I would have a national sales tax, and whatever you purchase, there's a sales tax, and that's it. We aren't taxing your labor. We aren't taxing your investments. We're just taxing our consumption. If people don't want to go down that road, the other thing we could do is a flat tax. So everybody pays the same amount. Let's say it is 15% of our income. Every single person pays 15% of your income. It doesn't matter if you make $10,000 a year or if you make $100 million a year. You still pay the same percentage. Obviously, the person making $100 million pays an awful lot more than the guy who's making $10,000. That's a fair system. Everybody pays. What's wrong with our system today is that about half of the people in the United States pay zero, pay really virtually nothing when it comes to the income tax system. And so that's why I think everyone has to pay something. You either, if we're going to pay income tax, everybody has to pay the same rate and a lower rate, or go with a national consumption tax.
But the flat tax wouldn't take care of the fraud that you mentioned, would it?
You wouldn't be the biggest part of fraud in the tax code today is the earned income tax credit.
Oh, okay.
That is a huge area of fraud, but it's other areas too. People take deductions and all the rest, and they get their check in the mail, and then you find out 47,000 checks went to the same address, and it's a scam that's being run by people. And Medicare, Medicaid, these are huge scams, and now Obamacare will be more of the same.
Yeah, because the consumption tax argument is that all of the hidden commerce that goes on out there, whether it's a drug dealer or it's just, you know, a bellhop who doesn't report his cash tips and so forth, that's stuff that never makes it into the system. And in theory, a consumption tax would take care of that.
Well, and the theory of taxation law is that if people pays anything less than 20% in tax, generally people be pretty honest. They'll pay it because they don't want the hassle of the black market. They don't want the fear of going to jail. They don't want that to happen. So if it's a reasonable amount of tax, that's why I say, if it could be 15%, no more than 18%, if we could be paying that amount in tax, most people are just going to pay it. It's like a hassle, get it over
with. It's an insurance policy.
It's an insurance policy. It's not worth any problems that you'd have with law enforcement.
Of the candidates that have at least put out their tax policy so far, are there any that you particularly like?
Well, I think the one that got all the attention was Donald Trump.
Of course, and but everything he does gets attention.
That's right.
That
but you know, his
plan,
tax
though.
Plan isn't terrible. What I don't like is that he doesn't have everyone participating. What I do like is the fact that he gets rid of the death tax, which is immoral. And he also lowers the rates. What a lot of people don't realize is that the reason why so many jobs have left the United States and gone offshore is because we have the highest business tax, corporate tax, in the world.
Yeah.
We're 35% with add-ons on top of that. The next country in the world is 25%. So if you are a shoe manufacturer, are you going to manufacture shoes in the United States and pay 35% tax? Or are you going to go somewhere else where it's 25% or 15%? Well, we know what the answer is because companies have voted with their feet, and our tax code is killing job creation in the United States.
Well, yeah, and there are limits to patriotism when it comes to matters of self-preservation.
Mm-hmm. I mean, well, yeah, exactly. Well, that you see that between the states. You see people who have made a decent income, like, for instance, in the state of New Jersey, they put this millionaire tax in, and so all these people freakishly moved out of New Jersey and went down to zero income tax in Florida. So it was a boon to Florida, not so much for New Jersey.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, you started out as a tax attorney and then you jumped into politics. What was it that got you into running for office or got you politically engaged?
You know, I was not a political person, but I am a mom and I have 5 biological kids and then 23 foster kids that we Wow. raised. So we raised a total of 28 kids. And I saw this nonsense come home in the backpack for one of my foster children who was an 11th grade girl from math class. And she had to color a poster. And I thought, how in the world will her life be improved by coloring posters in 11th grade? I had 3-year-olds that would color on the floor, but you don't, with me in coloring books, but you don't color posters and call that math class.
And I thought, don't understand that at all. Math
well,
class?
Well, look at Common Core curriculum today and you'll find out. It's the federal government takeover. The local
numbers?
No, it was nonsense. And so I, just as a mom, I was so worried about my foster daughters because my heart was broken for these kids. And if anyone needed a leg up, they did. And so I started doing my homework, and I reviewed the contracts between the federal government and the schools and the curriculum and the testing. And I put in 2,000 hours worth of research over a period of years because this captivated me. I had come from a home where my parents divorced, and we went to below poverty overnight. And the only way I was able to make it in life is my mom said, do well in school because no one can ever take away your education. Well, I had a living example of seeing our family lose everything, literally. And I knew that I didn't want to live in poverty. I wanted to make it. And so I studied really hard in school, and I did well. And so I knew for my foster kids, if they're going to make it, they have to at least have a decent chance in life with a good education. That's what got me involved in politics. And so I went to the state senate level in Minnesota first, and I was there for 6 years. I first did 2 years of activism and education. I went around the state of Minnesota, very liberal state, big Democrat state. We're the state of Al Franken. And I was actually able to be a part of a coalition where we got Democrats and Republicans to come together, and we threw this nonsense out of our public school education system. And then I was drafted to, by local people to go into our Minnesota State Senate, where I was for 6 years. And then I went to the United States Congress for 8 years. So I was 16 years in full-time political service. So that's a long time.
Just being on the PTA wasn't enough for
you,
huh?
No, I guess not. I never was on the PTA.
Oh, okay. Well, you have been a big supporter of the Tea Party movement from day one, and you were founder of the House Tea Party Caucus. I'm assuming that you still believe that the Tea Party is relevant today. What do you think the role of the Tea Party should be in the conservative movement looking ahead?
Well, it's really a voice of conscience because a lot of people don't know what the Tea Party is. Let me just say very quickly, the Tea Party believes 3 simple things. One is that we're taxed enough already. Number 2, government shouldn't spend more money than what it takes in. Number 3, when government passes laws, it should live under those laws. And government doesn't live under its own laws. That's it. Yeah. That's the whole of the Tea Party. People think it's all these bizarre, weird things, people with no teeth wearing red, white, and blue shirts. That is not the Tea Party. The Tea Party is pretty common sense. And that's what was frightening to the ruling class in D.C. because Democrats, independents, apolitical people, and Republicans all agreed with the Tea Party, with what our basic agenda was. It's wildly popular. And if people know what the Tea Party is, they're all for it. Democrats, everybody, they're for it. But it's been grossly maligned and contorted into something that it isn't. But it's been a conscience. And I think even now, when you look at the shakeup in the new race for Speaker of the House, and when you look at the fact that Hillary Clinton, for instance, just went down 10 points in the poll this last week in her bid for the presidency, she's no longer the sure thing candidate. I talked to Democrats today who told me they don't think she'll be the nominee. She can't survive. alive. She's probably going to jail, to be honest with you, with the FBI. So she probably won't be the Democrat nominee. And on the Republican side, look at who's number one, Donald Trump at 31 points. Yeah. It's because people don't want what Washington has been serving up, because innately, Americans love America. That's what it comes down to. They love this country, and they want our country to be wildly successful. And the sad thing is, we're on a steep trajectory of decline. And Donald Trump says, I want to make America great again. And it isn't just a nifty slogan. It's the fact that people believe that he believes it and that he's going to do something about it. And so whoever our ultimate nominee will be, whether it's Ted Cruz or whoever that person will be, it will be someone that the American people believes in making America great again and is going to do something about it.
Yeah, well, you know, I want to go back to what you said a second ago about the Tea Party. You said it was about three things, and what you named were all small government economic things. And I had this conversation with someone earlier today about this, and we were talking about how the Tea Party started out almost kind of as a libertarian type of thing, low taxes, keep the government.
That's because it wasn't partisan. It wasn't Republican. That's why.
Yeah. And he was saying to me, you know, that now, like you were just saying, the Tea Party has become about, in many people's eyes, about so much else, whether it's social conservative stuff or some of these other things. Is there a place for the social conservative agenda within the Tea Party, or should that be a whole separate thing?
Well, the Tea Party is not an organized movement, obviously. It right. just isn't. You've got some organizations that are Tea Party, but this is an idea. This is a philosophy. And so there's a lot of people who are Tea Partiers who are social conservatives. I'm one. I mean, right. I believe in marriage between a man and woman. I believe in protecting life from conception to natural death. That's what I believe. But it is a philosophy, and it's a movement. And people hold their views on various issues. I think national security and foreign policy is also becoming a bigger and bigger issue. Because, for instance, you know, the United States essentially had our rear end handed to us on September 30th when Russia literally evicted the United States from Syria. A three-star Russian general walked into the U.S. embassy in the morning of September 30th and said, you need to leave, an official communique, you need to leave Syria. And they built up a bubble of excessive denial, so we couldn't even get our planes in if we wanted to. We were booted out. For the first time in 40 years, Russia came in and we were booted out. So this whole issue of foreign policy and American weakness and decline, this is a huge issue now. And a lot of people in the Tea Party movement are also saying, you know what, I think I like it when the United States is also the military superpower of the world. And I don't like it when we're getting our rear ends handed to us because innocent people get killed.
Yeah. And, you know, after the Bush administration, after Iraq and Afghanistan, there was a bit, you know, and you saw this with Rand Paul and others. There was a bit of a trend of conservatives moving away from, I guess you would call it, the neocon agenda.
Yeah, but not
so
when you
forth.
See and not when you see U.S. journalists have their throats slit on live TV, and when you see innocent Christian women getting raped and then beheaded, and then their husbands raped and beheaded, their children taken away as slaves, literally. This is a very different world.
Yeah.
And so what we're seeing is the enforcement of fundamentalist Sharia Islam. And this is real. And unfortunately, our president sent a signal, a green light, to those who are advancing the goals of Islamic jihad, whether it's Sunni or Shia. And what they read from our president is that he's not going to stop them. I'm not saying Barack Obama is advancing them, but I'm saying that they read the tea leaves that he's not going to stop them. That's what Vladimir Putin, the president of communist Russia, saw, that Barack Obama's not going to stop me in Syria. And the Iranian Ayatollah said, are you kidding me? The American president wants what I want, which is a nuclear Iran.
Yeah.
Even President Obama earlier this year admitted Iran will have nuclear weapons within about 13 years. Well, then why, genius, would you give them $1 trillion in the next decade so they can have nuclear weapons, which they have said they will use to annihilate the United States, they will use to annihilate Israel, 5 days after the Iranian deal was signed, the Ayatollah said, "We have not deviated from our posture toward the United States. It is the same. It is to annihilate the United States." 5 days after the agreement, wouldn't you think a sane president at that point would say, "You know what? Deal's up. Those sanctions stay on." And you are in, not only that, if I was president of the United States, I would be working with my partners, both in the Arab world and our allies in the Western world, and we would start the process over 6 to 8 weeks, and I would take out the weapons and machinery of death, these nuclear facilities that Iran has all over the country. They'd be gone, every single one of them. We are so precise that quite literally we could take a bomb and knock out that microphone that you're talking into. That's how good and capable the United States is. So we're not talking about dropping a bomb on a shopping center or little kids or a senior citizen
home. Bombing.
We can take out the instruments of death, and that's happened 3 times before successfully, once in Syria, once in Iraq, and once in Libya. Had that not occurred in the last 30 years, the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda, which are running wild today in Libya, Iraq, and Syria, they would have access, potentially, to nuclear weapons. That's what their goal is. That's their goal. So thank God it was done before. Why would we be the ones to put money and the means to access and acquire nuclear weapons in the hands of the Ayatollah? That's scary that the American president was advocating for the same position as the Ayatollah of Iran, the chief sponsor of terror in the world.
The one who says death to America.
Every day of the week. Yeah. Death to Israel. Every day of the week.
Yeah, that's our ally now.
That's right. And if there's anything history has taught us in the last 100 years, it's this, that when a madman speaks, listen.
Yeah.
Look at Mao Zedong.
Word.
Look at Stalin. Mm-hmm. Look at Hitler. These people have literally killed, the three of them, over 100 million people in the last century. The Ayatollah plans more of the same.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back to talk more with Michelle Bachmann. This portion of the podcast is brought to you by Audible. Audible has over 180,000 audiobooks available to download for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And right now, Kick-Ass Politics listeners can get a free audiobook download and a free 30-day trial. Just go to audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics or click on the sponsor link on our webpage at kickasspolitics.com and go get your free audiobook. And if you like Kick-Ass Politics and want to help keep us on the air, then please support the show by making a donation to our GoFundMe campaign at gofundme.com/kickasspolitics. Or go to the show website and click on the donate link. Your support will help keep us producing new and interesting programs in the future. That's gofundme.com/kickasspolitics. And now, back to the show. We're back, and I'm talking with former candidate for president in 2012 and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. A lot of people were criticizing Congress for not doing more to try and block the Iran deal. What did you think about that? If you were still in Congress,
worst,
do you think there's something you could have done?
One of the worst tragedies there ever was. Absolutely. The biggest mistake is that Congress surrendered the treaty clause of the Constitution.
Right.
It's called the Corker Bill. And it was this is what the Corker Bill said for your audience. It said, you know, President Obama, we want to read this Iran agreement. So in order to read it, we're going to give up what the Constitution gives us. We have the benefit of the doubt. You, Mr. President, have to get 2/3 of us to agree with you on your treaty. We're going to disadvantage ourselves. We're going to make ourselves have to get 2/3 of the vote rather than 1/3 of the vote. So in other words, you're going to guarantee win. You're going to win. But at least let us read the agreement. Guess what happened? The president never even let them read the agreement. He held out the most important part, which was the inspections on these nuclear facilities. Congress still hasn't read the agreement. John Kerry, the Secretary of State, hasn't read the agreement because they didn't want anybody to. And so here's what's brilliant.
Just like the Health Care Act.
That's right. Here's what's brilliant under the Corker Act. It says, if the president fails to give the written agreement to Congress, then guess what? Shazam. all of the sanctions stay in place on Iran. This is what's wrong with John Boehner and Mitch McConnell. This agreement was signed about 5 months ago, the Corker bill, and our Republican leadership didn't even have the guts to stand up and enforce the bill they just passed, to stand up and say, Mr. President, you didn't give us this agreement. Guess what? Now it's a treaty. Now you have to get two-thirds vote. Bingo, we're keeping the sanctions. That's what a sane Congress would have done, and that's why John Boehner is gone, and that's why Mitch McConnell is probably going to be counting the days, because people are saying, enough, enough. You don't let a nutcase like the Ayatollah of Iran have a nuclear weapon, and you Republicans are so fight averse, you won't take the president on and something this important. And Barack Obama, we don't want this Iran deal, and the American people are turning against him too. So that's why Washington is so out of favor today.
Yeah, I mean, was the whole Corker bill, was that just all for show then?
The Corker deal, I believe, was the White House outsmarting the Republicans. I think they went to Bob Corker and said, hey, we got this genius idea. We know that you guys don't want to fight. Let's all get along. Because President Obama threatened Mitch McConnell and John Boehner.
Yeah.
Barack Obama said, I am getting this Iran deal. You're not going to get your budget. It's called the continuing resolution that had to be passed by September 30th. You're not going to get me to sign any continued funding of the government without you paying for that Iran deal. I'm getting it. And he said, I'm going to shut the government down. This is what he told them. I'm going to shut the government down before I'm going to let you not pass that Iran agreement. So Boehner said, okay, he capitulated. Mitch McConnell said, okay, capitulated. Because they were worried about their own political hide. They wanted to make sure that they kept, quote, Republican ownership of the House and Senate. And what I have said is that that's their surest way to guarantee they'll lose Republican control of the House and Senate. But the sad thing is, President Obama got his way, and his way could potentially kill millions of innocent people across the world. And I hope the next president, whoever that person may be, on the very first day, we'll take out the nuclear hardware, which is going to be insanely hard to do.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that, because everyone is saying we'll rip up the agreement on day one. Is it going to be hard to walk this back two years down the line after this is already in place and the money's been given away?
Let me tell you, practically speaking, why this is going to be hard. The Russians sold to the Iranians the S-300s. If you remember, a little over a year ago, the Russians shot out of the sky a Malaysian aircraft over eastern Ukraine. It was leaving Amsterdam. Almost 300 innocent people were shot down out of the sky.
Yeah.
And Russia read the tea leaves. They went into the former Soviet Republic of or state of Georgia. NATO, the UN, the U.S. did nothing. They annexed Crimea. NATO, U.S. Did nothing. They went into eastern Ukraine, NATO, U.S., U.N., did nothing. Then they shot this civilian airliner out of the sky. Nothing happened to them.
And that was supposed to be the turning point, I thought. Wasn't it?
Well,
I'll tell you. Wasn't everyone saying that's the moment when we were going to pay attention to this?
Well, we didn't.
We were going to get
serious.
The
media went silent in about 24 hours. They went silent. And Obama went silent in 24 hours. And it's like, what's going on here? So now it's okay. Now we can play target practice on innocent civilian airliners. The Russians used a system, weapon system, called the Buk-15. The Buk-15 is not as powerful as the S-300. So what this means is the Russians have just sold to Iran an access of denial system so that a bubble will be built over Iran so that even if we wanted to, it'd be virtually impossible to go into Iran and take out their nuclear hardware. That's what the Russians did to us on September 30th. They said, don't go into Syria. We're going to be there. Mm-hmm. And they built an access of denial bubble over Syria so that we couldn't go in. Otherwise, U.S. jets and U.S. pilots would have been shot down. Yeah. That's what the Russians did together with the Syrians and the Iranians. And that's the gift they're going to give to Iran. And here the Ayatollah will sit with their bubble, and we can't do anything about it.
Yeah, it was the same thing that they did with the Malaysian airliner.
they basically took over the investigation and said, oh, no, no, we've got this covered, and tried to shut out the UN and the U.S.
And Barack Obama let
and
them.
And do cleanup over
and
on
Barack
it.
Obama let them. Mm-hmm. And let's not forget who we're dealing with. Communist Russia.
Yeah.
Communist China. Communist Cuba. Communist Venezuela. The Islamic jihadist fundamentalists in Iran. Go down the line. This is the worst of the worst coalition of communists and terrorist thugs. And now these gypsies, tramps, and thieves are in league, and they're determined that they're going to control the chokeholds in the Middle East so they control the access and the distribution of oil and natural gas globally. That's what's at stake.
It's scary. Well, you know, in a related issue here, you were on the Intelligence Committee.
We dealt with the nation's classified secrets, in particular terrorism.
And since you've left office, we've had a lot of disclosure about government surveillance and so forth, and a lot of pushback against that.
That all happened under the Obama administration.
Right, exactly.
The worst intelligence failures in the history of the United States. It began with WikiLeaks, with Julian Assange, but the terrible leak was with Edward Snowden. And Edward Snowden took literally over a million classified American documents and handed them over to the Russian and the Chinese. And they've got those secrets. And he himself personally put at risk thousands of American soldiers on the battlefield. This is no hero. This is a betrayer worse than any Benedict Arnold we ever had. But then the Obama administration themselves leaked some of the most sensitive information. They leaked the fact that they said that Israel was planning to bomb some of the nuclear facilities in Iran.
Right.
Then they said that Iran was cooking up a deal where they could have refueling of their jets in Azerbaijan together with Saudi Arabia. They were leaking one sensitive detail after another that cut the legs out from under Israel and
hurt us with our allies.
And lifted up the goals of Islamic Jihad. When have we ever had a president that's made decisions that advance the goals of Islamic Jihad and slammed the door on the only sane democracy in the Middle East, Israel? We've never seen that before. So this is the very first time that the United States has shut the door on Israel. Israel's completely alone. No country in the world today has Israel's back. None. And so don't think that that information is lost on Russia, on China, on Iran, on Hezbollah, on Hamas. Every ugly actor in the world is looking at the Jewish state, and they want to carve it up because Israel has made a find of natural gas in the Eastern Mediterranean Sea and also oil in the Golan Heights. And so now they've got what Putin and Iran is after.
Yeah, they're seeing dollar signs. Well, you know, again, if you were on the House Intelligence Committee today, when it comes to the surveillance issues and, you know, listening in on American citizens and so forth, between the small government Tea Partier in you and the hawk in you, where do you think that you would fall on a lot of these issues?
Well, where I fall is following U.S. law, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
U.S. law prohibits the NSA, for instance, from listening in on American conversations, domestic conversations. I was in the Intelligence Committee during that controversy, and the fact is there is not an example of where the United States abused its authority on the metadata system. There isn't one that exists. In fact, just the opposite. That was the most audited program of any federal agency. You want to look at waste, fraud, and abuse? It's rife. Just look at the VA. Look at the IRS. I mean, look at the EPA. It's there everywhere. The one place where they were audited and they did what they were supposed to do was in the metadata program. Yeah. You want your government to listen in on foreign intelligence. That's what we're here for. You want your government to keep you safe. So we are supposed to actively be monitoring and gathering intelligence from foreign actors. And obviously, it's physically impossible to listen to everything, but we had pretty good capability to be able to listen in to America's enemies. We need to do that. Remember, don't forget, the number one enemy in the world for Iran is the United States. Russia's number one enemy is the United States.
Yeah.
China's number one enemy, the United States. North Korea's number one enemy, the United States. Guess what all these thugs, rogues, gypsies, tramps, and thieves have in common? They all hate us.
Yeah.
So we have got to be right 100% of the time. They only have to be right once. And that's why we are terribly vulnerable right now. I am beyond disgusted with how our president has squandered what was given to him. He was given the most magnificent nation that was ever created in the history of man. We were the number one economic powerhouse when he became president. We are slipping to number two behind the Chinese. We were the number one military power in the world when he became president. We are slipping faster than anyone realizes. Very shortly, China will have a bigger navy than the United States has. This is unbelievable.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, Michelle, you sound like a candidate.
I am here enjoying myself in beautiful Los Angeles.
That's a lot like candidate for president talk.
I was a candidate for president in 2012. I wish, I don't, honestly, I had no personal ambition. My ambition was for the country. And I wish I could have been president in 2012, because I guarantee you the very first thing I would have done on the first day is put my coalition together, and we would have eliminated the menace of a nuclear Iran. That would have been gone. And we would have sent the signal. There would have been no Islamic State. We would have routed the Islamic State, and it would have been a very different posture toward Vladimir Putin, and also the cyber espionage with China. We haven't talked about that, but yeah. Your listeners need to know China is the worst China espionage hacker in the world. They have literally stolen trillions in private money from the United States by stealing our private secrets and also our military secrets. We spend huge amounts of money on R&D so we have the best of the best on military. Well, it's practically manufactured in China before we can get it. They've stolen it just in real time as things are being produced. China is not for America. China is for China. They are they fly under the radar, but they're living a long war. They're about 40 years into their 100-year plan.
Ahead of us.
Oh, they are determined that they will be the hegemon in the world. So here's what's happening right now. You've got China, Russia, Iran all vying to be the lead dog in the world for world domination. And I think what happened on September 30th, we had this thing called Pax Britannica, where Britain ruled the world and maintained world power. Somewhere along the mid-1943, wordlessly, quietly, without any formal written declaration, power left Britain. They were no longer the economic power of the world. They were no longer the military power of the world. So by default, the United States became the world's leader, and the era known as Pax Americana began. It is my worry that Pax Americana ended September 30th, 2015, when the United States dropped the baton of world power. And instead, what you're seeing is scrapping, like if you see cartoons of wolves where they have their tongues hanging out and saliva running and their eyes are real big, like a cartoon bubble, they're all scrambling over that baton.
Yeah.
China wants it. Russia wants it. Iran wants it. They intend to be the leaders of the world. Right now, they're cooperating with each other to annihilate the United States. Their goal is to have us be gone, but then they intend to dominate. It's not a pretty world. It was a very painless, easy transition from Pax Britannica to Pax Americana. This next one won't be Pax, meaning peace.
Yeah.
This will be chaos, devastation, and war. And that's why this is such a crucial election.
Well, yeah, and we've sent a signal that the world is basically theirs for the taking. So
Barack Obama sent that signal. And that's how Putin read the tea leaves. And here's Barack Obama. What's his response? What's John Kerry's response? Well, as long as they take out the Islamic State, I guess it's okay. Yeah. And so these guys, I don't even know if the president and John Kerry fully realized 2 days after the event what had happened to the United States. The tables have turned. We've been evicted from the Middle East, and Russia and Iran and China and Hezbollah and Hamas are in charge. It's a new day, and it doesn't bode well.
Yeah. Well, before we go, you were, as we said, you were a candidate in 2012 for president. You were the only woman in the whole GOP field. Based on that experience, would you have any wisdom for Carly Fiorina?
Oh, sure. She is a fabulous debater on the stage.
Oh, yeah.
And I think she's doing everything right. I think she's doing a very good job conducting her campaign. I think where some people have very legitimate concerns is the fact that she wasn't there for a lot of the conservative fights along the way. She was very much a part of the establishment for a lot of her life. And I think that's not what people want right now. They don't want the traditional establishment. She was a spokesman for John McCain when he was in the primary. She was a spokesman for John McCain. And what people are looking for is an authentic, principled conservative who's been there, who's willing to fight. Because the place that we're at right now in world history, we need somebody who's going to be as transformational and bold as Barack Obama was. He literally did transform the United States. He went further. He transformed the world. And we need to have a conservative at the helm as President of the United States who is bold, who will transform the United States and the world and try and pull us back to make America great. And I'm not saying here I'm, you know, endorsing any particular candidate, but what I do see is in a Ted Cruz, he totally gets it right on Iran. He totally gets it. He would do the right thing. And I see in Donald Trump also somebody who I think wants to do the right thing, but he doesn't have that experience on these issues. He doesn't have that background on these issues, but I think he does. But we've got a Ben Carson, who I think is right on all the issues. We've got a lot of great candidates.
Great
seriously, any single one of them are competent and capable to be president.
Okay.
And I'm not just saying that. They really are. They could do it. Rick Santorum would do a fabulous
job. Is there anyone
job.
You don't like?
I don't want anybody who's going to be for amnesty. And unfortunately, we have way too many that are in favor of amnesty for illegal aliens and even worse, committed to maintaining the open border policy that is just killing the American people. One out of four Mexicans now live in the United States. And all that has done is bring down the wages and benefit packages for Americans. It's killing the millennials, the rising generation that's coming up. So we have got to build a fence on north, south, build a fence and actually secure our borders. Don't let people overstay visas. And I believe that we need to hit the pause button and have no immigration for a while. Calvin Coolidge did that in the 1920s.
That's true.
We had too much immigration in the United States. The nation needed to take a pause. What happened? Wages went up. Benefits went up. And people had a chance to assimilate into American culture. That's what we need to do now. Hit the pause button, for heaven's sake, and kind of regroup, bring America up. We need to be stronger. And then we can open our doors back up and only select the people that are going to benefit America. We need to stop importing a welfare class. That's all we're doing. We prefer a welfare class. We even pay people to come into the United States who can't afford to come. That wasn't the history of my ancestors, probably not the history of your ancestors. We didn't have insane policies like that. But what we need to do is take a pause. Have people get assimilated, strengthen the country, build up wages and benefits, and think more about what's better for America and Americans. And because we can't solve all the world's problems. We're having a tough time solving our own.
Well, Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's an absolute delight. And I hope one of these days you do decide to jump back in there. is there anything that you want to plug that you're working on these days?
I am not plugging anything. I really
enjoying
what
life.
What I'm plugging is the country. What has captured the focus of my attention is the issue that is head and shoulders above any other issue in our country, and that's preventing Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, because they will use it against us. They will use it to annihilate Israel. And so I was focused on that. Unfortunately, President Obama decided to go ahead, and the Republican Congress foolishly, stupidly allowed him to do that. And so I'm going to continue to tell the story, and hopefully we will see a change on Iran before it's too late. But the other issue that has to be front and center domestically will be closing our borders from any more from immigration, certainly illegal immigration, but even regular immigration, and dealing with the problems that we have in the country.
Well, Michelle Bachmann, thank you again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Ben. It was great.
Well, that's the show, folks. And thanks again to former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann for taking the time to talk to me. Be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes and leave us a review. And don't forget to go on our website or click on the survey link in the show notes to take that listener questionnaire for me. I really want to get a feel for who our audience is, and if you just take a minute to fill that out, that'll be a huge help to me. The other thing you can do to help the show is to go on your Facebook page or Twitter to recommend Kick-Ass Politics to your friends and suggest that they subscribe. And if you do that, each week you'll be entered to win a signed copy of a book by one of my guests on the show. To be entered to win, just go on your Facebook page or Twitter and tell your friends about Kick-Ass Politics. Now be sure to include an iTunes link where they can go to the show. And as I said before, if you promote the show on both Facebook and Twitter, you'll double your chances of winning an autographed copy of my book of the week. In fact, you'll be entered to win every time that you recommend us to your friends on social media. So be sure to tag us when you do so. You can tag us on Twitter at KAPolitics, or our Facebook page is just Kick-Ass Politics. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, gripes, and suggestions at comments@kickasspolitics.com. In the next episode, my guests will be Fred Barnes and Mort Kondracki. Fred Barnes is the co-founder and executive editor of the Weekly Standard, and Mort Kondracki served as the executive editor of Roll Call and former Washington bureau chief for Newsweek. But you probably know them best as the co-hosts of The Beltway Boys on Fox News. Well, they've teamed up again to write the first ever biography exploring the legacy of the late NFL quarterback, congressman, and self-proclaimed bleeding heart conservative, Jack Kemp. According to them, Jack Kemp may well have been the most important American politician who never made it to the White House. And in their words, he's a model of how politics ought to be. We'll talk about how Jack Kemp's pro football career influenced his leadership style, and how he became the backbone behind President Ronald Reagan's economic policy. We'll also discuss his crusade to help America's underprivileged and bring African Americans back to the party of Abraham Lincoln. Plus, Fred Barnes and Mort Kondracki will talk about 2016, the GOP primary, and the need for more Republicans like Jack Kemp in today's acrimonious political climate. All that coming up with the Beltway Boys in the next episode. But till then, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass Politics.